Welcome to Build Beyond Bricks, the Western Sydney Community Forum podcast. A place to learn, share, connect and explore, using analysis and insights to lead and shape the future of communities.
Hello and welcome to Build Beyond Bricks. This is a platform which is all about communities. My name is Martin Silvera from the team at Western Sydney Community Forum, and I'm here to host today's conversation. The podcast is recorded on the lands of the Darug people, and I would like to acknowledge the cultural knowledge, wisdom, and ways of working that the Darug people have. I would also like to acknowledge and pay my respects to any people and country you are listening from today, and my warmest welcome to our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island listeners. The extreme of Australians' climate and weather is part of our national identity. It's characterised by times of extreme heat and drought, and then bitter cold and floods. And today, whilst Queensland and parts of New South Wales are experiencing unprecedented rainfall and flooding, today's episode, ironically, is about climate change and urban heating in Western Sydney. So before we start today, I would like to acknowledge that the people and communities affected by the floods on the eastern coast of Australia, you're in our thoughts. Please stay safe. On to urban heat. We're unpacking the growing impact of urban heating and what it means for the community in Western Sydney. And we're going to share our ideas, thoughts, tools, and experiences with our guests today, so we can support each other in providing services to our local communities across Western Sydney. Our guest today is Kelly G, Policy and Projects Officer at Western Sydney Regional Organisation of Councils, known as WESROC. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Kelly, first of all, congratulations on the work WESROC's been doing in this space. You've recently published the 2021 Heat Smart Resilience Framework. It looks amazing.
It's been a long time in the making, and we've been really privileged to work with a whole range of different organisations across Western Sydney to bring that together.
I've read it and it shares some amazing insights. You can really tell that you've really spent a lot of time in developing the framework. So I'd like to start the conversation today. If you can tell us a little bit about WESROC and the current work you're doing in heating.
Yeah, so WESROC is an organisation that represents local government in Western Sydney. We work on a range of programs that our councils identify as priorities for the region as a whole and for the communities that live there as well. Heat was identified in around 2016 as a priority for WESROC to work on, just because councils had seen the impacts it was having on the day-to-day lives of community members, but also on council services and critical infrastructure as well. And I guess in terms of the work we're doing on heat, having worked on it for quite a few years now, there are really, I guess, it's a multifaceted issue, and we are working on a range of projects to address different parts of that heat problem. So as you mentioned, firstly, Western Sydney has a naturally hot climate, and it is getting hotter due to climate change. So the outer parts of the region are expected to deliver around 20 additional days over 35 degrees annually by 2070. We are working with councils on a Western Sydney energy program, which is looking to help them reduce their emissions, improve their energy efficiency, and also work with local businesses and communities. Secondly, and as you've mentioned, one of the big issues in heat affecting Western Sydney is the urban heat island effect. So on top of climate change, we're also seeing urban heat occur due to the unprecedented rate of development we're having in Western Sydney. Urban heat occurs because hard urban surfaces like roads and concrete and roofs absorb and hold onto heat and keep our cities hotter for longer and preventing them from cooling down, particularly overnight. Unfortunately, there is a lot we can do in this space, and WesRock has been working with councils to develop some of Australia's first urban heat planning controls to make sure we're developing areas that are cooler and reduce that heat over time. And that includes measures like lighter coloured roofs, tree cover, water sensitive urban design, and looking at street orientation in some of those bigger master plan developments. And finally, the third reason that heat is an issue for Western Sydney is heat waves. So heat waves are life-threatening meteorological events. They happen quite regularly in our region. And it's important to recognise that regardless of what we do with climate change and urban heat, we're still going to experience these events. So that the Heat Smart Western Sydney framework in particular is looking at how we can better manage heat waves in future, particularly as the climate warms and we start seeing more severe, frequent heatwave events.
Can you tell me, how has urban heating affected communities, especially in Western Sydney, and what are those broader implications?
WesRock and a lot of our partners as well have done a lot of engagement with communities on this issue. It is a really important area for communities. A study we did in 2020, residents rated heat as an equal importance to bushfires. That was just after the Black Summer bushfires. And some of the results from that, you know, 80% of residents reported suffering loss of sleep and lethargic, you know, not feeling that great. 58% were worried about energy costs. And we know that Western Sydney households on average use 100% more energy for cooling than in Eastern Sydney just because of those hotter temperatures. 32% had lost power to their home. 28% had felt unwell or sought medical advice. 24% had had transport disrupted and had been left, you know, stranded on a train station somewhere due to kind of those breakdowns that happen in our infrastructure. And 34% reported feeling stressed or mentally distressed, which isn't that surprising given that they might have been dealing with, you know, energy bill stress and worried about picking the kids up from school and not being able to get home, but also that chronic, you know, loss of sleep over a longer period during a hot summer. It can really be quite stressful for a lot of people. And, you know, those individual stresses, they really build up to broader impacts because when, you know, the whole of Western Sydney is feeling a bit grumpy and we haven't had sleep and we're feeling stressed and we're finding it difficult to get around due to some of the transport disruptions. Another study conducted after the 2017 heatwave found that 30% of businesses had found higher than normal staff absenteeism. They had reported a 16% increase in workplace injuries and also experiencing power outages, which can have economic impacts like food spoilage and other disruptions to business. So, there are those broader impacts. And I did want to point out that I guess the most dangerous part of that problem is the potential for increased power outages because that has cascading impacts across, you know, transport, telecommunications, electronic payment systems, and even mains water if we did have a really extended power outage.
We are characterised as a nation of very extreme heat and very cool weather and flooding. We often think about it as things that we just put up with, but your report points out there are things that we can actually do about it that will have better impacts on our health and well-being. And it sounds like those impacts are far-ranging, right from the way we feel, the way we experience health, the way we conduct business, and even how we protect ourselves whilst we're at work. It's very comprehensive. I wonder if you can tell me who's most at risk of experiencing the negative impacts of heat?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of, you know, heat, health-related heat impacts, definitely elderly people are by far the most at risk just because as we get older, our thermoregulatory processes in our body don't work as well as they once did. And also older people are more likely to have chronic health conditions that can be exacerbated like heart conditions or kidney disease, which are two really key ones. But also very young children and babies, they're not quite as good at maintaining their correct body temperature yet. People with chronic disease or taking medications, a lot of medications can really impact your body's ability to cope with heat. So it's really important to check in with your doctor at the start of summer just to ask those questions and get a personalized heat plan. And then on the other side of the spectrum, people who aren't able to afford energy or might not have access to a car to get to a cool space during a heat event are far more likely to be impacted by heat. And outdoor workers or people who need to exert themselves during the heat, some studies conducted at some Western Sydney hospitals recently found a significant increase in the number of fit, healthy people who had just made poor choices in terms of their hydration or the level of activity they were doing in the heat were presenting to the emergency departments far more than would be expected based on their health-related risk.
And I think that's what struck me about the 2021 Heat Smart Resilience Framework, that young, healthy people with no chronic illnesses who just happen to have outdoor work can be affected by heat. Therefore, it's important to have some strategies in place at the work health and safety level to prevent against the effects of heat when you're outside.
Yes, absolutely. And working through that heat resilience framework, you know, broadly speaking, we all know that heat's a problem in summer. We've all experienced it. But we did find that a lot of businesses and a lot of organisations and a lot of just individuals as well hadn't planned for heat and didn't have that formal planning in place. So we have developed a heat smart guide, particularly for local organisations, to look at how they might put in place a really basic heatwave plan. It doesn't need to be anything extensive, but it does prompt people to think through some of those potential risks that might come. So that includes, you know, whether outdoor workers or people who are travelling for their work need altered hours or additional check-ins or some additional breaks during summer. But even, you know, for us working in offices, a lot of, you know, we can be still be impacted by heat. So some of the prompts in there include thinking about what temperature your air conditioning is rated to, because a lot of air conditioners don't function very well over 45 degrees. And we know in Western Sydney that we do often reach those really high temperatures. But it might also include thinking about how you'll manage during a power outage, you know. Will that affect access to your building? Will it affect the lifts or electronic payment systems? You know, what types of impacts will that have on your business and your staff, and how will you manage that?
It's great that you mentioned those strategies. It brings me to my next question, which was, what can the community do to address the growing impact of heat? And I know, because I've been on the WestRock website, which is amazing, that you've produced several resources that cover a range of strategies for community organisations and even people working in the direct forward-facing services, which is really impressive for me, having recently come from social work. Your tool for managing clients is fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit more about the resources that you've produced?
We've been working with councils and the local health districts to look at how we can give people some really practical tips on managing heat. And that goes beyond just, you know, the normal, you know, messaging we hear about drinking water and staying cool, which is definitely something we should be doing. But it's really about planning ahead, because when we're in those situations, and particularly for people who might be more at risk or more isolated than others, waiting till a heat wave has struck is not the time to be thinking about what we can do. So it really outlines, you know, what we can do at the start of summer to prepare our home. And that might be sealing up gaps to make sure that if we are using air conditioning, we're keeping that cool in. It might be putting up some extra shading. It's checking in with our doctor to check on our medications and see what our risks are and how we might manage them. But it also talks about, you know, what to do prior to a heat wave. And that includes, you know, preparing, getting that water ready and ice packs and things ready in your fridge if you don't have air conditioning, stocking up on food so that you don't have to do unnecessary travel during those extreme events. And it also includes, you know, really low-cost tips for keeping your body cool if you don't have air conditioning and you are relying just on fans and maybe, you know, a wet towel or an ice pack to keep you cool and keep your body safe.
I highly recommend the WestRock website because you do have that resource called 10 Tips for Cooler Homes, and it has some really practical things you can do, ranging from the really easy kind of sealing off a room, keeping the shades drawn, right through to planting trees and more kind of long-term like sustainability type strategies, don't they?
Yeah, and I think in that resource as well, we've really tried to make sure that there are tips in there for people who might be renting and may not have the capacity to change their own home, but also, you know, people who are homeowners that can make some of those long-term investments. So, yeah, as you mentioned, planting trees, obviously it's a longer-term thing, but if you are renting, that might also include planting some larger plants like bamboo in pots and putting that in front of your windows to try and shade that your home from the sun. It also includes creating a cool room, which is a really good strategy. So rather than cooling your whole home, shutting off a nice cool area to reduce those energy bills and really focus your efforts in that area. But also, as you mentioned, some of those bigger ticket items. So if you are renovating, if you are looking to repaint or redo part of your home, choosing lighter colours are always far cooler than dark colours that absorb heat, you know, putting in shading, improving your insulation. And we also have a note in there, and I will just raise it because it has come up in a lot of the work we've done with communities, that a lot of people believe that solar panels will protect them if there's a power outage. However, that's not the case. So making sure that you are prepared to lose power in your home and know what you will do and how you can manage that situation is really important.
And why don't solar panels necessarily protect residents from blackouts?
Yeah, so when we have, you know, power outages, often, you know, our Endeavour Energies and our Ausgrid, you know, energy providers need to go out and work on the lines to restore the power, and they have an automatic shut off on solar panels so that to protect their workers and make sure that they're not at risk of power entering the grid while they're working on those lines. There are systems that you can get that are islanded that will continue to work. However, they're not common and they are quite expensive. So unless you specifically purchase that type of system, the likelihood is that you will lose power in a power outage, even with solar panels.
Mm. So especially for our most vulnerable communities, our senior Australians, people living with chronic illnesses that have equipment at home, that's going to be a really vital part of planning ahead, isn't it?
It is. And you can register with your local energy provider. They do have programs in place to assist people who might need medical devices or other things to ensure they continue power. But, you know, and another more reliable option might also be a backup generator. If there are things that you're really worried about and you need to keep that power, that's another option as well.
And I'm glad that you brought up that there are a range of things that renters and homeowners can do that are low cost but super effective. So, and that's covered in many of the resources that you've produced. There's even one for parents as well, which is really practical, that people can keep on hand on the fridge around the home, which I found really useful.
Yeah. As I mentioned, kids are at a real risk of heat-related illness, and often, for anyone experiencing heat-related illness, it impairs your cognitive ability, so you don't always realise that you're suffering, and particularly children, they don't know to stop and take drinks of water, so they are really impacted. It's really important to understand the signs of illness, which are included on that flyer, and, you know, if in doubt, call 000, because if nothing else, the emergency services will be able to provide you with a bit of advice.
What are the key messages that you would like to give decision makers and the community about this issue?
The big point for this is that whether it's taking action on climate change, whether it's addressing urban heat, whether it's preparing and planning for heat waves, you know, the evidence is there. We know what to do, but we all just need to roll up our sleeves and get cracking. Every single organisation and community member, we all have a role to play, and it's really about finding out where our what we can do in our own space and in getting on with it, whether that's educating communities, whether it's improving urban planning or social housing design, or providing outreach services or phone calls to check in on at-risk communities during heat waves, and or in an organisation, if it's just developing a heatwave plan to look after your staff and make sure they're safe, it's about getting out and doing that before summer hits.
And I like that point you make that almost as we like to say, luck favours the prepared, and the resources and strategies and frameworks that you've put together really helps us and the community prepare for heat. Why was it important for WesRock to create this framework?
It was really important. And like you mentioned earlier, often heat is something that Western Sydney residents and Australians broadly just take in their stride. We don't really think about it or prepare for it as much as we should. We created the framework because heat doesn't have the same emergency planning and arrangements around it as, you know, bushfires or floods, yet it kills more Australians than all other natural disasters combined. And as climate change, brings us hotter weather, we really need to start thinking seriously about how we plan for heat, how we design communities to protect residents, but also how we can practically assist those really vulnerable people who are most at risk from heat-related illness. So the framework really, we developed it through extensive interviews with stakeholders and community members and literature reviews to look at best practice. And it's really about outlining the next steps and how we improve our planning for heatwave. And we've been really pleased to see that the New South Wales government and Resilience New South Wales has committed to looking at how we can implement some of the recommendations, because as I mentioned, you know, it's only getting hotter and we really need to make sure that our communities can be safe.
I just want to pick up on that thing that you said, heat kills more people than bushfires. Is that right?
Than bushfires, floods and storms combined.
Wow.
So of all the natural hazard related deaths since around 1900 in Australia, over 60% have been heat related deaths. And that is significant, but it's even more significant when we consider that there's a significant underreporting in heat-related deaths. So people presenting to hospital, if they're having a cardiac arrest because of the heat, it's listed as a cardiac arrest rather than a heat-related death. So we do think those numbers are still underrepresented. It really is. It's kind of a silent hazard. It's not dramatic like some of the floods or fires that we see, but it really impacts people in their homes and often when they're home alone in an isolated environment.
Mm. And I'm imagining that when cause of death is recorded, you don't say heat. You think of it as a correlation, but not the direct impact of. So it's good that you point that out. And I think I know what you might say here about what can we do. You know, cheeky question, the federal election is coming up. What do you think is the issue? Will the issue be a priority? And what would you recommend to candidates?
I think it is a priority, as are, all of the natural hazards that we've had over the past few years. This, we need to be prepared for the increased intensity and frequency in which we're experiencing these events, whether it be bushfire, flood or heatwave. It is an issue that's really important for Western Sydney communities. And I think the federal government, like everyone else, has a role to play in all three elements of heat. So obviously we want to see them supporting action on climate change and reducing emissions. WesRock has been advocating as part of the National Construction Code reviews. So currently the way we're designing new homes, we're assessing them against past climate data, when really we need to be looking forward and making sure these homes can keep people safe, in 10, 20, 30 years' time. So we've been advocating for the National Construction Code to look at future climate scenarios and get that housing up to standard. And finally, heat waves themselves are not recognised as a disaster event under the federal legislation. So we would really like to see increased recognition for heat waves, because while Sydney has been very fortunate not to experience a major catastrophic power outage or similar heat wave event like we might have seen in Adelaide or Melbourne, the potential for that is increasing as we move forward, and we need to ensure that all of our legislation is supporting the response to those potential events in future.
Can I recommend that people head over to the WesRock website, www.wsroc.com.au, and check out under the projects tab the resources which Kelly's been talking about and the framework that's been produced. Fascinating conversation. Thank you so much, Kelly, for joining us.
Thank you very much. And I'll just quickly point out as well that we will be having a heatwave preparedness workshop for organisations on the 22nd of March in partnership with Western Sydney Community Forum. So anyone interested in learning more about what they can do in their own organisation, look out for the links to that when they come up, and I look forward to seeing you there if you register.
So check out the show notes for more information on that upcoming event. Again, I'd like to thank Kelly G, the Policy and Projects Officer at Western Sydney Regional Organisation of Council, WesRock. Thank you so much for spending this time on our program today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Build Beyond Bricks by Western Sydney Community Forum, the region's social development council, providing programs, services, analysis and insights. To learn more, visit us at wscf.org.au.